Well, it's my great pleasure to once again welcome into the studio Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry.
How you doing, Mike?
And this is another edition of Valley Edition. We have on the phone an experiment. We have two people calling in from two separate locations. I'd like to welcome Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning. And I'd also like to welcome off on the phone somewhere in front of a computer, we believe, Zaz Hollander.
Good morning.
Well, this is an interesting time. We've had just the brief coating of snow, sort of a prelude to what's going to be happening both nationally and here in the state. And by that, I mean we've had the first announcements. I think Governor Walker, who through some of his representatives in his administration, have outlined to Resource Development Council, I think most recently, his intention for what's going to happen this next year. And I guess the question comes down, how far down the road will whatever happens in Juneau flow? I've had an opportunity this morning to talk with Nate Wallace, who's the Palmer City Manager. And, of course, they're finishing up their budget right now. The legislature will be starting this whole process in January, but Palmer expects to be done by the 13th of December. And Palmer doesn't depend a lot. There's some revenue sharing that comes on down, but Palmer is kind of removed in some ways from the decisions that are made on other budget situations, but not so much the borough and the school district in particular. So I thought we'd begin by saying, what, looking ahead, do you think is likely to be different this year from last year? How about that? We have a new legislative gathering with some new faces in leadership positions. We have a governor who said we're a year closer to a disaster. We have a national change in the presidency. Is it going to be business as usual? Or do you detect anything significant that's popping up?
Interesting questions. One quick observation I have. I was sort of struck watching the news last night. The report of rising oil prices. There seemed to be, they talked to a couple of folks in the legislature, including Kathy Geisel. I sensed, and it might just be, you know, based in studied cynicism, but I sensed a little bit of, you know, taking the foot off the gas in terms of the urgency to find a solution to the fiscal situation. I hope that is not the case, because clearly, as was pointed out by, I think, Berta Gardner, she said this is helpful incrementally, but it is in no way close to a sustainable answer to the problem in the long term. So hopefully they do stay focused, keep their foot on the gas, and do find us a good, workable, bipartisan solution.
Well, I think Mark, you raise a good point. The problems seem to be large in terms of the fiscal gap, and there is what appears to have been in the past a philosophy, if you will, or emotional feeling about things getting better, and so people, when they looked at a small change that seemed to be an improvement, we're projecting in a straight line, perhaps, to say, well, this is all going to get better, so therefore we, once again, don't have to do anything. Zaz, any comment about what we've just been talking about?
I think that Mark is on the right track, as always, that, you know, the meeting that was held at the school district headquarters a few weeks ago with all the state wonks, you know, demographer, legislative finance director, and economist, you know, basically the bottom line was, well, we could kind of skate last year and not do much on the legislative level, but we have to do something now or we will run out of money and we'll no longer be able to deficit spend the way we have been. I think that the urgency of this session and the new bipartisan coalition means that something will get done.
Okay, Terry, you're here.
Well, I think what's different is people are already starting to feel the pain. They've already seen a deduction in their PFD because the governor's hand was sort of forced to fill an empty hole left when the legislature walked away from the problem last year. And you're also going to see some fresh eyes, particularly from the Valley. We have a couple legislatures that have been replaced. And so you have some maybe some new ideology, or perhaps you just have some fresh eyes that either are on step and know what's been going on, have followed the process, or are going to be sort of out there. You have a completely different look to committees on in some ways. I saw the committee assignments come out yesterday, and there's definitely new committees, people, you know, heading those things up, particularly finance and in-house. And you have two complete different methodologies on how to do things. You now have a bipartisan side and the House side where it's, you know, Republicans and Democrats working together. And then you have business as usual for the Senate side, who is strongly held by what the oil companies want. So we'll just have to see what happens. It could be business as usual. It's a 2-year session. So, you know, they have more time to languish before they have to run again. So, you know, hopefully they will do something.
So I don't
know how much more urgent the governor can make it, actually.
And I'm interested in your perspective on this. Looking back over the previous 2 years, the governor is, in some respects, a bipartisan governor. And as I remember, there were a number of Democrats that didn't agree with his proposals in the past. So it's not as if we have what might be the simpler situation of a Democratic governor and now a Democratic-dominated coalition, and the presumption being that they will work together somewhat closely. But you have a coalition which is made up of people that may or may not support what the governor is doing. In fact, we've had it over on the Senate side, a Democratic senator who has sued the administration because of an action they took regarding the permanent fund. Mark, any comment?
Well, I just maybe just to add on to Terry's point, I think the governor for sure will keep the sense of urgency up. Beyond that, I think it's anyone's guess. The pieces are in place for something more than business as usual, but you know, time will tell, as with everything.
Okay. So there's not much more, I think. I mean, there are prognosticators and others who have tried to predict what would happen in January and so on. But we'll leave that for a moment and come back here to some situations in the Valley. And as part of the bridge and segue, Zaz, you did a fairly extensive look at a situation which has captured the attention of many people, and that is a missing young man, a teenager. And I found that even in a trip to Anchorage yesterday, the people were asking how that was coming out, what was happening. How about summarizing for listeners what that situation is, at least as we know it now?
Yeah, that's David Grunwald is a 16-year-old from Palmer, and he disappeared on November 13th. And there's been really no sign of him since, except for one, you know, not promising sign. His Bronco was found basically torched on the trail up Bald Mountain Ridge, the kind of mountain behind Wasilla, pretty popular four-wheeling in summer and snow machining in winter. And besides that, that's sort of all that searchers, his family, have to go on. And, you know, because he's, you know, at least a fairly clean-cut looking kid. I think that's part of the reason that this whole story has really captivated a lot of people. Just the mystery of it, and just how does a guy like that, you know, get into what might be the kind of trouble that would lead to him to disappear like this? It's, I mean, there are a few people who are wondering if he, you know, if he's out there somewhere intentionally. But the people, the investigators I've talked to and his parents say that that really is not, that's not him. Why would he burn his own, you know, kind of cherished Bronco that he was fixing up to sell? And, you know, he sounds like a real interesting kid at his career in tech ed, studying aviation, the kind of kid who could, you know, put together his own computer, the kind of kid who gave other kids rides. But, you know, also like any 16-year-old, or most 16-year-olds anyway, you know, maybe a little bit of, you know, big talk about his Bronco or whatever. And so, you know, I guess if there is any speculation, it's that, you know, he may have, you run into the wrong kind of friends of friends of friends out there somewhere.
Okay. Terry, have you...
Just completely heartbreaking. I've had a similar experience with this, with a family member, and it's heart-wrenching. And it certainly speaks well of our community that they've really raised to the occasion and really tried to help these parents. And I just hope they find some answers, because it's nothing any family wants to go through.
Okay. So what I have wondered about is... thinking we're into December, we're getting close to that time when the new year will hit. And I'd like to take a moment to reflect upon what December 2015 was like. Let's go back a year. I know.
What was it like?
Well,
I think we were still talking about the ferry, weren't we?
Yeah.
Ah!
Well,
that's true.
That is true. So I just want to bring our attention back to that, because I have discovered that we focus on things that are very significant or we think are, and then they go by. And today, for example, is the 15th anniversary of the bankruptcy of a company that was very much in the news, the largest bankruptcy in the country's history. Do you remember the firm? Do you remember the name? I can tell you.
Was it a financial firm?
It was
yeah.
Yes, and it had five letters in its name. Is that helpful?
Enron.
You got it.
Yeah.
15 years ago.
Wow.
Years ago. And Enron, I bring that up because as we enter whatever financial situations we have today, one of the things that emerged from the story was the kind of lack of transparency. In fact, some would suggest a misrepresentation of the company and its holdings, et cetera, which allowed many of the employees and investors, et cetera, be really burned as it couldn't continue on what was essentially a giant Ponzi scheme, and it crashed and burned. There are hints that we don't have all the information these days about things. It's looking back that we're reminded of the necessity for doing due diligence about anything, that we're either investing our money or our time or perhaps even our votes in. So I wanted to go back to 2015 in part because 2015 was not 15 years ago. It was only 1 year ago. And you brought up the ferry, and Zaz, you watched that most closely. I had somebody ask recently, is it truly, truly done? Do you see any lingering threads to that issue?
Oh, well, there's still the, theoretically, the $12.3 million in federal grants that we still haven't heard the end of, that the borough several years ago now was told that they owe the FTA.
All right.
I'll be taking a trip to the Philippines. And I haven't called the Philippines or reached out to them somehow to find out if it's physically there yet and what it's doing. That would be kind of an interesting junket, wouldn't it? Maybe,
okay.
We should have a Valley Edition broadcast from the Philippines aboard the ferry.
Okay. I will take that under advisement. We'll pass it by. Terry, you're looking
so
thoughtful.
Is there any lawsuits going on that yet, Zaz, or
I haven't
settled anything? It's been pretty quiet. I haven't heard it brought up at an assembly meeting lately, so perhaps that's something in executive session that's been discussed.
Okay, let's also flip back to 2015, December. Remember that at that point, all those elections, we're talking about the August primary, the October elections, the November elections, had not happened. So we were essentially being besieged by a lot of people's attention to the beginnings of campaigns or the continuations of campaigns. So we were in campaign mode. We were in promise mode. And as we rolled into the actual voting, there were a number of surprises, and they began this past year with the number of people, I think, who failed to make it through the August primary. You know, as I look back, I think that was the beginning of surprise. The elections aren't turning out just the way everybody might have thought. And I think one of the biggest was the change that had Mr. Culver not get through the primary and even into the general election to the Alaska State Legislature. And then, of course, in the primary, also having some very, very definite surprises for other sitting incumbents who didn't pass muster. Then, of course, we had a number of surprises, I think, as people leading up to that time resigned or left the legislature. So I think back in December, that was it was seemingly business as usual, but it proved this year not to be that. Any comments?
Well, I don't think anybody would have predicted back then, one, that Wes Keller would have faced a primary challenge, and two, that he would have lost. I think that was more surprising than Culver losing. You know, Culver had a target on his back from the time he got elected the first time. So, you know, that might be less surprising. But, you know, Keller been around for a few terms, appeared to have no opposition. People seem to be happy with him, certainly in a district that is fond of returning incumbents to the legislature, the same basic district voted for Vic Coring six or seven times. So it's obviously a district not afraid to support an incumbent. So I think all these things made that race in particular surprising to me.
Okay.
More surprising than Lynn Gaddis being defeated for her run in the Senate?
Also very surprising. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I think what sticks out to me, and it's not oddly with me, not political, is the Sockeye fire in 2015. To me, that was the event that kind of sticks in my mind. And this was the time of year that, you know, those people that lost their homes were all still trying to find a place to live and where to put their dogs. And to me, that was the event of 2015, but I may have missed a few others.
No, that was a big one. In fact, recently we've noted that the trial for the two people, a couple accused of essentially starting the Sockeye fire, has been postponed until January. And this concerned a number of people who were looking forward to testifying, and in particular doing that before the mushing season began in January. Sides, you had a lot of coverage of that fire. Add anything to what Terry has said?
That delaying that trial is a big deal. You know, this is the second winter now after the fire, and there's still, you know, it's the fire zone is still all black sticks. Those trees aren't coming back anytime soon, and I think it's kind of settled in more how life has changed. You know, last winter was still rebuilding, and this winter is reality. So there were buses that were going to go from the Willow Community Center to the courthouse as soon as that trial started. Mm-hmm. And so that residents could get down there, including mushers. I think that the prosecution certainly wanted, mushers and, you know, high profile mushers and not to serve as witnesses, but also to pack the courtroom. You know, the jury sees some familiar faces like Dee Dee John Rowe or Martin Boozer. And, you know, that's important. The reason it was delayed was that one of the defendants, Greg Immick, his father, who I understand had been unwell for a long time, is apparently fairly close to dying and may already have died at this point. I don't know. And so the request was to delay the trial until mid-January, and the prosecution said we'd rather delay for just a week because of the reasons stated that by mid-January, or, you know, Yukon Quest, Cusco 300, all the Iditarod qualifiers are starting, and a lot of mushers aren't going to be able to be in the courtroom. So it sounds like, realistically, this thing may not happen until April or May.
Whoa. Wow. So
there's a long time to wait for people who are still really, really frustrated and slash angry at what happened, and at the fact that at this point, Greg Emig and Amy DeWitt haven't even showed up. Certainly haven't showed up in Willow, but haven't even showed up at the courthouse.
Well,
they're out of state now.
And it probably lengthens the time if there's any civil suits, because normally they wait for the criminal one to go first.
Exactly.
So it puts them on hold, too, to recoup any losses.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
And a lot of people were, building out of pocket.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Well, as you were talking, I was thinking about another disaster, which seems to have not, at least in maybe many people's minds, there's still people that live in that area. And what I'm talking about is the flooding along the river. A lot of attention drawn to it when the water was rising. And I'm talking about in particular this time, although the Sutton area has previously had some problems, the area in the Butte. And it's one of those things that there isn't a trial, per se, of any sort. It was nature that was working. There are still unresolved. There was what I saw as a kind of a temporary fix, an ad hoc fix there, but that doesn't preclude the waters from rising again. And it's it feels to me, for many people in the public, possibly to be out of sight, out of mind. Although if you live there, I'm sure you have an edge of concern. You covered that too, did you not, Zaz?
Yeah, I covered the Matanuska flooding a fair amount. One of the properties threatened upriver, out of Sutton, is the Musials, Ed and Val. And they're both, gosh, I hope they're not listening, they're in their 80s at this point. And they've been out there for decades, and Ed has long contended that, at least for his property up there, it was government malfeasance that caused a lot of the flooding. There were dikes that weren't maintained, which is a similar refrain downriver in Butte, where there was a long kind of, I'm going to call it a retaining wall, but that's not the right word for it, that most of it, I think about two-thirds of it now, has been eroded by the river. And in the late 80s, I think, all government agencies started pointing at each other. The state pointed at the borough, and the borough pointed back. This is your responsibility. And so nobody maintained it, which is leaving, the old Glen Highway vulnerable to erosion. And the Glen Highway up north in Sutton, which is why there was a big fix up there. When that road is threatened, then the government can step in. So it certainly has not been solved. There was a fairly significant rock trench put in along the Butte section of the river this fall. So it'll be interesting to see if this happens again next summer, fall, if it holds.
Okay. And of course, lacking snow cover and with all the potential for warming and all the rest, there are still both potentials for fires and a potential for flooding to occur. But they, again, when it's not happening, I'm sure emergency preparedness people and others are thinking about it. It does not seem to be a topic of large conversation, for example, at the Borough Assembly. I haven't noted a discussion on the agenda about that. It's one of those things that is at the back of your mind.
No, until it raises its ugly head again, then they have to deal with it. But it's going to be, it's, as Zaza said, it's a problem. It's a long problem.
Okay, well, I want to thank the three of you for going on a little bit of a tour of what's happened over the past 12 months, starting back basically with the Sockeye fire and the rest of it. We're going to have it. We have what appears to be a couple more Valley Editions as we roll toward Christmas, and as more is revealed about what is shaping up as a struggle in Juneau, that may spill over into the local area, and there'll be discussions. Comment was made in the past. Certainly, the governor has invited local entities to participate by contacting their legislators. He has said that I'll lay out my plan. You can talk to me, sure, but go ahead and tell them to get with working on this. And there's been some pushback. It sounds as if in part people are saying the legislature and the governor need to work this out. But since everyone in all of these positions is sensitive to what people are thinking, I suspect that it's important, if you're a listener out there, anyone, unlike the flood or the fire, which is maybe coming, I think this looming fiscal crisis is much more just over the horizon. Okay, well, I want to thank Terry Snyder for coming in the studio this morning.
Good weekend, Mike.
And I want to thank Mark Kelsey for calling in.
You bet, Mike. We'll see you next week.
All right. And I want to thank Zaz Hollander for also calling in.
Yeah, glad the experiment worked out, Mike.
Yep. It's almost as if we were all together in the same room. Marvel of technology. Thank you all. We'll talk to you next week.